Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
This should be fun. Tiny little sandwiches. Children, dogs. There's kind of nothing more disgusting in the world. I don't know what's going to happen here. Relax, come on. I'm not going to hurt you.
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh boy.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess which one I am? Process of elimination. I'm Ron Van Dam. Hey, here's a multiple choice question for you. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Who am I? Am I Ron Van Dam? Or am I Ron Van Dam? Or am I Ron Van Dam? Or none of the above? None of the above. Welcome to the program. How are you? We're going to have some fun today. I'd be the judge of that. I got a great guest coming up in the program today. It's Kelsey. She's a friend of mine, and she wrote a book called I'll Be There For You. I wonder what that could be about. Well, that's part of the lyrics of the theme song to Friends. She's written an intricate book about behind-the-scenes relationships, how the show is put together, and all that kind of little gossip stuff that we love to read about. She joins us on today's program. That alone should do it for you. It's going to be stupendous. We grow up on television shows. Not that we're in them and we grow up on them, but with them, I should say. My childhood was watching TV. I've met some people, oddly enough, who claim that they didn't watch TV and they still don't. I don't know what planet they're from, not this one certainly. I grew up with certain television shows. Friends was not one of them. I was a little bit older when that one came around. But I loved that show. As a matter of fact, if I have nothing to do, and I'll raise my hand, that happens. I will actually find reruns of Friends, and I'll sit back and just enjoy them. They were brilliantly written and acted, and I like that show. So this will be fun for me, too. It's nostalgic, man. We need nostalgia in our lives. Things are so tumultuous right now, politically and around the globe, and if there is a globe left over because of the climate change and oh my God. So you need something that's of some comfort. And I find comfort in old television shows. In the long run, they're meaningless, but it's like comfort food. It's like sitting in a chair and eating macaroni and cheese. You feel like afterwards that you're going to die and your stomach's going to explode. But for that period of time, that was quite a comfortable experience. So, when I was younger, I never thought about things. I just assumed that they're taking place and I'll leave it alone. Then when I got older, I realized that things are pretty really crappy. You can't leave them alone. Things are naturally, on their merits, pretty crappy. Crappy is the normal. When people get involved and do things, things are all right. They get better. But naturally, they're crappy. And then you get people in the into the White House who are crappy, and crappy plus crappy equals a lot of crappy. That's where we are now. So I seek places that I can go to, happy places, comfortable places from my past. That's pathetic. Anyway, Yeah, you go through the summer, man, and it's like, you know, oh, this is nice, and I love the fall. The fall's coming, but oh my God, isn't the fall hurricane season? I never used to think that way. I never used to say to myself, oh my God, hurricane season is coming. Now I do. Because this is a time of year where we go through this hurricane thing, and virtually every single hurricane season year, there's some city or town or part of the United States that gets really seriously in danger because of these tremendous hurricanes that also spawn tornadoes, flooding, power outages, trees coming down on your head. I mean, it's like bad news, baby. Hurricane season. Never even, I didn't even know when hurricane season was till a few years ago. I learned it's like now. So Hurricane Dorian has formed and headed for Florida. Not for vacation, but to ruin them. I don't know why people move to Florida. It's a wonderful swing state. But I don't know why they do that. It's like, you know, we're getting old. Let's go to a place where storms hit on a regular basis, where it rains at 4 o'clock every afternoon and becomes so humid that you can't stand it, where it's so hot, it's like 100 degrees outside and 10 degrees inside where there's air conditioning. Let's go to a place like that. That sounds healthy. I don't know. Anyway, so it's headed toward Florida. To make landfall somewhere between Miami and Jacksonville, somewhere in there. So far, that's the prediction at the time of the taping of this show. I'm sorry, recording. There are no more tapes. They're all digitally mastered for your convenience. In the wee hours of a Monday morning. So, and people are going nuts. Flights are going to be canceled pretty soon, and people had Labor Day plans, and no labor going on here. By the way, I thought Labor Day when I was a child was honoring all those ladies who are going to give birth really soon, but it's not. So, I mean, you know, one of the worst feelings is that a storm is coming. It could destroy your home and your life. That's not something to look forward to. Or even the possibility thereof. And once again, trolloping down the road of pure idiocy is Donald Trump. You familiar with this guy? You heard of him before? He somehow got the job of president. I think he lied his way into the office on his job application. Wouldn't even show his tax returns. But somehow he got in there. I don't know how. He jimmied the lock and got into that place. When this particular storm was feasibly going to hit Puerto Rico, Donald Trump tweeted that Puerto Rico is in the way of another storm again. And he degraded the governor and mayor of Puerto Rico and San Juan and all those places and told them that they were it's a corrupt territory and they're inefficient. I mean, he slammed them as a hurricane is barreling toward them. And I'll never forget that with the previous devastating hurricane that knocked out that entire island. Donald Trump standing there in a photo op tossing paper towels to flood victims. And we all know when your house is flooded, all you need is a roll of paper towels and you're good. It was the stupidest photo op I've ever seen in my life. It's embedded in my brain because it's the poster child of his stupidity. but he's slamming Puerto Rico before the hurricane could even slam it. The hurricane took a turn, didn't hit most of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico came out okay. Now it's heading to Florida, and all of a sudden Donald Trump is canceling all his plans so that he can keep a very close eye on Florida. We're going to be there for you. We've got the finest people. It's always the finest people ready to help Florida. And he's very concerned about no slamming any politicians there. He's very concerned that Puerto Rico, flush that sucker down the toilet. Florida, that's a swing state. I need those votes, Donald says to himself. I swear that you know that's the reason. Florida, yeah, I need those votes. That's a swing state. Also, guess what? His Mar-a-Largo resort is there. That's Donald's second home. And that's an older place in need of some repair anyway. So if the hurricane hits there, Donald's got some property problems. So Donald's, of course, if Donald's not personally invested or vested into a property, into a situation, he'll slam it. If he needs the votes in Florida and has property there, he'll be very concerned and I'm with you all the way. It's almost laughable. Hey, I just laughed. It was laughable. Man, what a bozo. What a bozo. Ron, you're not supposed to speak of your president like that. Oh, excuse me? My president? I don't think so. Well, he was voted in as president, Ron. No, the Electoral College voted him in. Popular vote didn't. He lost a popular vote, which he's still very, very hurt about. Doesn't want to talk about that. He won the Electoral College, and you know about the college admissions scandal, so that's not going to work for him. Trump my ass. Ooh, I'd like to see that on a hat. Anyway, whatever. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers for the people of Florida and everybody else in the way of that that hurricane. We're still in hurricane season. It goes through October, so happy Halloween to you. You know, they don't need our thoughts and prayers. I don't know how much that ever really helped. these mass shootings. Oh, they have our thoughts and prayers. How about doing something about it, huh? Thoughts and prayers don't stop the thing. Let's do something about it. Once again, nothing is done. No laws passed. As a matter of fact, Congress goes on vacation as soon as the mass shooting occurs in both Dayton and El Paso. So, I don't know, man. I just don't know anymore. I just don't know. Anyway, we do turn to nostalgia when things get pretty crappy. And I did enjoy the show, friends. I thought it was fantastic. I used to watch The Cosby Show. The hell was I thinking? Yeah, Bill Cosby was America's dad. Ooh, that doesn't say much about the television family structure, does it? If that's the dad, we in trouble. I understand that Bill Cosby is actually doing quite well in jail, as well as somebody can be. He actually entertains the other inmates, and I guess that's not a bad jail to be in. Yeah, what do you do on Saturday nights? Well, Cosby's here. We get a show on Saturdays. He's funny. We're good. Actually, jail isn't so bad. I think next week they're bringing in Jerry Seinfeld, I think, is going to be staying for a little while. No, he's not. I just made that up. God. It's a long weekend. We call it a long weekend. Monday is not part of the weekend, but because it's a holiday, we are actually extending the weekend for 3 days now. We do that every once in a while. We take a weekend and we go beyond the limits of the weekend with a Labor Day thing. This is how we honor people that work. We don't work. That's We celebrate the American workforce by not working. And that's how we do this. Labor Day. I don't mind Labor Day because I don't understand it. I don't. It's not religious. People don't say, oh my God, it's Labor Day. Let's get dressed for church. No, no. There's no connection whatsoever there. Labor Day is not referenced in the Bible, as far as I know. So that's okay. You eat stuff. You eat bad stuff. You eat stuff on the grill. Hot dogs, things like that. Not a good, healthy kind of holiday. At least Thanksgiving, you're eating turkey, which is supposed to be somewhat healthy for you. You know, if you stretch it, it's somewhat healthy. All the crap that goes with it is not, but the turkey itself, yeah, you know, it makes it more palatable. But Labor Day, not really, no. No, there's nothing really going on there. But it's a good time for people to gather together and sit outside and get bitten by mosquitoes and put a little charcoal down your throat, you know? Good times, good times. A little alcohol, man, you know? 3-day weekend. Thought there's only 2 days in a weekend. Nope, special. We're going to make it 3. And kids are back to school. Oh, my God. Thank you so much, school. Look, you know, for a long time, people were saying, you know, schools are not babysitters. They don't take the place of parents. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Yeah, they are babysitters. And they do take the place of parents. Yes, they do. Well, they're not meant to, but they did. What do you do when you drop your kids off at school and they're there for the whole day? You go off and you do your thing. That's called babysitting. You pay for it in your taxes. Everybody does, whether they have kids or not. They don't even come home for lunch. They even feed them there. That's like sleepaway camp. Yeah, they're babysat. That's what it is. You drop your kids off until they come home. You're free to do what you want. Get your stuff done. Yeah, they're babysitters. It's daycare. Let's face it. Let's stop playing games. It's daycare. They throw a little education in, but no, it's socialization and it's daycare. And do teachers take the place of parents? Sure. Sure they do. Are you kidding me? Parents don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to handle kids. Teachers, this is what they do professionally. They handle kids all day. They give them advice. They give them education. They give them nurturing. They give them discipline. They give them boundaries and a socialized situation with rules and regulations. Yeah, they've taken your place. And let them have them. Teachers are your parents. It's fine with me. Go for it. Like, I have the time to be a parent? No, I don't have. It's what I pay my taxes for. Daycare and secondary parents. Come on. Don't we all have teachers that we remember when we were growing up? We loved our teachers. I had a first grade teacher, Mrs. Brown. Nice lady. Attractive, too. And I was in first grade. I mean, I didn't know what attractive was, but she was very, very appealing. And I'll remember her. I remember her. Fondly. She's probably dead at this point, but I fondly remember her. My parents, I can't even remember their names. Okay, fine. Anyway, it's about time that we spoke to our guests. We're going to talk about the television show Friends, which was an iconic program for so many people. We're going to do that right after this.
Ron Van Dam likes to treat every listener as someone with whom he is having an intimate, personal relationship. Although no money changes hands, there are fewer sticky bodily fluids, about half as many apologies, and he probably won't have to get rid of your body in the long run. Other than that, it's a pretty standard relationship for Ron. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show.
Hi, Kelsey.
Hi there. How's it going?
Great. Kelsey Miller joins us. She's written the book, I'll Be There For You, the one about friends. It's a fascinating book, and she's a very successful author of previous work as well. Hey, I've got to tell you, as a talk show host, I read tons of books every year. This is one of the most enjoyable books I have read. Congratulations to you.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you very much. That's a lovely compliment.
I think also you chose a subject that immediately connected people to your book. Friends was one of my favorite series in casting and in writing, directing, the whole bit. And this is a fascinating reunion for me as far as that time period is concerned. Why were you so attracted to this subject?
Well, I think for the reason you mentioned, which is that it played such an enormous role in so many of our lives. It had such a massive cultural impact, so big that I don't think that we all fully recognize it. You know, it's a show that debuted over 24 years ago, and yet here we are still talking about it, still watching it, still one of the most popular shows on television and streaming. And I really wanted to explore both the show, but also the phenomenon, the Friends phenomenon, you know?
Yeah, it's for sure. Very similar to Seinfeld, both, of course, taking place in New York, but similar in the sense that, in my estimation, it started off kind of okay and then built in momentum to the point where it was brilliant. It seemed to get very comfortable with itself, and then all of a sudden things started sparking. Did you find the same thing?
I did. I think that they had a certain amount of, you know, they had a really high energy from the beginning, and the cast had that incredible chemistry, and the writing was strong from the beginning. But I do think it took them a little bit of time to find their footing. And I think particularly by season three, where, you know, that's where they kind of graduate into a more grown-up show and become something that's really funny and just crackles with energy, but also has, like, an emotional resonance to it.
It almost seemed like toward the end they were running out of scenarios. I think there was every combination of every friend going through every possible situation. Do you think that how did it end indeed? Was it a choice? What happened?
Well, you know, I think if the network had its druthers, then Friends would still be on the air today. But yeah, I mean, the cast really, they had that sort of unionization. They were really a union of six, and they would come together when it came for every contract negotiation and vote together about whether or not they wanted to stay on. And I think that what kept the show going for so long was that connection between them, the fact that they really did have such an incredible working relationship and a friendship among them. I mean, as you say, when they get to season 10, there are some, you know, weird things that go on. I'm not a fan of the Joey and Rachel episodes, but it's surprisingly strong, and I think the finale is one of the best television finales of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, it ended the way it was supposed to end, I think, which was very satisfying. Yeah. And that it turned it into a nice thing as compared to other series that get too bizarre at the end. And then they go like, wow, that was not worthy of everything that had gone on previously. Let me ask you, when I watch the reruns now, I see the World Trade Centers in the background at the opening of the establishing shots. And that always grabs me. How did they handle that scenario when they were actually in the middle of it?
Yeah, that was a really complicated issue for a lot of television shows, but I think Friends in particular, because it was so popular and it took place in downtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I think that the producers made a really smart choice, was that they decided to show and not tell, because they didn't think it would be appropriate to talk about this openly or to do a quote-unquote very special episode of Friends. Nobody wanted that from the show. What they wanted was to be able to revisit something that was familiar and funny and reliable. Mm-hmm. And so they did things like putting little visual cues throughout the show. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you recall, after 9/11, American flags popped up everywhere. They popped up on Friends. The characters wore FDNY t-shirts.
Yes.
And, you know, they put a little title card up on the first episode that aired afterwards, which mm-hmm. was dedicated to the people of New York City. Mm-hmm. Because the people who created the show were, you know, they'd all lived in New York, and the series meant a lot to them. And right. in many ways, New York was the inspiration for the show. So sure. they really wanted to treat them with respect after that.
Yeah. It's interesting now, as our country gets very divided in their relationships, that there was a lesson to Friends, I would suppose, that we could probably, you know, embrace now.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I'm, you know, if only because that was a show that was so universally adored. I mean, of course, there were people that didn't like it, but mm-hmm. it was a show that was incredibly popular in, you know, almost 200 countries it ended up being syndicated wow. in. It's something, it's like a cultural touchstone for mm-hmm. so many people.
Yeah. The storylines were, I don't know if they were so extreme for that time period, because other things on other shows were also quite extreme, but Friends hit a lot of different scenarios that weren't necessarily mainstream as far as relationships and having babies and single parenting and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they did. They did. When you look back on it now, it all seems very sort of sterile and tame. But frankly, you know, the writers did have to push a lot to get a lot of those storylines on the air. Or even something like, you know, a mention of condoms was really hard to get on there. And they were saying, but wait a minute, aren't we talking about, you know, safe, responsible sex amongst adults here? And they were like, no, you can't talk about condoms. But yeah, as you point out, there's divorce, there's single parenthood, there's like blended families, there's, you know, same-sex parents in the show. There was the first lesbian wedding on television, all of that.
Yeah, yeah. Was NBC very permissive of the Friends topics because it was so successful? Were they leaning more toward you can do pretty much whatever you want?
Well, it's funny because I think there was a perception of that. Mm. And I think really if anybody could do what they wanted at that early on, Seinfeld probably had more leeway. Mm. I mean, if you recall, there was this famous blackout night that they did where all of the shows in the New York NBC universe experienced a blackout during one Thursday night.
Yeah.
And it was really good. It was a good, you know, it was a good stunt. It worked. And Seinfeld was the one show that was like, no, we don't want to do it. And they just didn't do it. Yeah, but I think by the towards the end, Friends probably had a lot of leeway, but in the beginning, they definitely had to negotiate quite a lot.
Yeah, some of the cast members had some personal issues. I know that one was alcoholism, drugs while the series was still going. How did that pan out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, one of them, Matthew Perry, dealt with prescription drug abuse and alcoholism, which he was very open about, which I think is very admirable. And and I think all of his cast members were open about the fact that it was really, really hard because they did, not only because they had a strong friendship, but because they were, you know, each other's colleagues and they had to rely on each other. And it's an ensemble show. And they, I think it was a really rough period for all of them. But, you know, they all talked a lot about the fact that they got through it. And to their credit, I think nobody's really told salacious stories about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've managed to keep whatever went on behind the scenes amongst themselves. Yeah. I have a lot of respect for them for doing that.
What's amazing is that each and every one of them, all six, after the show was over, hit their own heights in their own individual ways and continued to be quite effective in the business as many of them are now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're all still out there.
Yeah.
And the fact is, you know, being on a successful show like Friends, they had the ability to go off and do what they wanted afterwards. Mm. But they also were always going to be recognized for those characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that a lot of them have had to sort of find the balance, you know, between fighting against that while maybe just rolling with it, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. It's a great book. And now don't say anything. I'm going to say something. You can't say anything. Pick up this book. It's called I'll Be There For You, the one about Friends. It's a great book. It is so much fun and so insightful and just brings you back to a place that you want to be at. And I told some people that we were doing this interview, and they said, oh, when you finish with the book, can I read it? I said, nah, goodbye, your own. That's the way I am.
But, thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no, it's great, and I can't wait for your next work. So is there a website that we can follow?
Yes, absolutely. You can find me on kelseymiller.com. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Ms. Kelsey Miller. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Facebook at Kelsey Miller, and you can find the book pretty much anywhere you want to buy a book.
Yes, they still sell books. This is great.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. Hey, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, it's great for me.
I know, it's good for you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, hopefully
thank you.
Okay, take care, Kelsey.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
Hey, that was fun. Well, tomorrow we can do this again, you know, the next time a weekday rolls around. I don't know when that'll be because it's a long weekend. I think it's going to be like 25 days long. But next time another weekday rolls around, I'll be here with a brand new show. I hope you'll join me. Until then, I wish you peace. Excuse me. Yeah, you left your keys here. Yeah, your keys are here. Yeah, you're welcome. Excuse me. No, you. Yeah, you. You left your pants here. Are these your pants? Yeah, take them, please.